This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
I wanted to put a real stock on an animal. That was a huge measure of success for me. I finally got my buck on our last real day of hunting. And now let me tell you guys, Mason is insane. We'll be cruising along full speed in the Rangers, getting to the spot where we're gonna get out, and all of a sudden out of nowhere he's like, oh look, there's deer on that hill. Oh look, there's a bunch of antelope over there. The muffler had basically come completely detached. We had to stuff our ears with earplugs, with toilet paper as earplugs. You can skin them really quick and easy, and you can do them up just like a cassette of chicken wings. So you get a good group of jackrabbits or cottontails, you can have yourself a good old Super Bowl party. I knew this to an extent, but I didn't know how far it would take me. The difference between theoretical and practical knowledge. Giant bucks are freaking awesome. They're beautiful. But you know what? I would not trade this first buck for anything in the world.
Y'all ready for your dose of flyover state spirit? Straight from the concrete jungle? Well, put down your latte and pull on your boots. It's time for Living Country in the City.
Hey, y'all, welcome to episode 82 of Living Country in the City. I am coming at you solo, somewhere in between the cities of Durango and Fairplay, Colorado. As y'all know, I have been out for the past several weeks in Arizona hunting antelope and mule deer with my good buddies from Hunt 3A. And, you know, I wanted to take a little bit of this time to just do a quick episode, something a little different, and reflect a little bit on the hunt and talk about some of my thoughts. You know, this one may not be as valuable to some of you experienced hunters, but you never know what you will come across in this episode, so who knows where my ramblings will take me. Just wanted to really quick say thank you to the fine folks over at Sawyer Products. They are huge supporters of the podcast, have been for quite a while now. And one of the things about this trip is I have been using Sawyer products on every turn, whether it's their bug spray, their sunscreen, their first aid. I have relied on their products this entire trip. And heading off to go elk hunt right now, I'm excited to use even more, pulling out this gravity filtration system and a lot of the water filtration, definitely slathering on that bug spray because it has been gross and warm. So the bugs have been out in force. But make sure y'all check out Sawyer Products. That's Sawyer.com. Give them a look. Go check out some of the products. They are designed for the outdoorsman in mind. All this stuff is scent-free. Not that you're not probably already stinky from spending days in the backcountry, but why add additional smell to the equation? Anyway, getting back to the episode. Like I said, spent the past three, four, I lose count weeks out in Arizona. You know, I just want to start. I can't say enough of a thank you to the guys with Hunt 3A, Josh, Mason, Jeremy, RJ, you know, even Joe and Paul Rippey, you know, all these guys that I've spent the last several weeks learning from that have been giving me advice, guiding me through stuff. I've said it a few times already, but in the past three or so weeks, I have gotten more practical experience and knowledge about hunting than in all the time of reading books and watching videos and, you know, even recording this podcast, all combined. It's amazing the difference, and I knew this to an extent, but I didn't know how far it would take me. The difference between theoretical and practical knowledge. I mean, I study constantly. I talk with some of the most interesting and knowledgeable people in the industry, but nothing is going to replace sitting down with someone who has that experience and glassing with them, or having them take you on a stalk, or watching them go on a stalk, seeing, you know, when on that stalk they pull their arrow out of their quiver, seeing how they walk on crunchy leaves or rocks, you know, even just watching when they draw their bow when the animal's walking by, or when it's facing a certain direction, when they move. There's so many little things that just you don't get from reading. You know, you can read all these things, but it just does not sink in until you see it done, until you do it yourself. And maybe that's just me. Maybe that's just the type of learner I am. Going back to my junior high learning styles class, I am what's called a tactile kinesthetic learner, meaning, you know, I don't necessarily learn from people telling me what to do. I don't even learn as much from watching them do it. I learn mostly from doing things myself and getting hands-on with them. And it's just amazing watching myself from the beginning of the week to the very end of it. You know, take glassing, for example. Watching how quickly I could pick something up when somebody else spotted it. How quickly I could pick out those unique landmarks to point someone to a spot that I was checking out in the glass. And it was really exciting to see that improvement. And as a new hunter, any improvement is super exciting. And, you know, after several, you know, quote-unquote failed hunts, you know, I mean, they were very successful in their own ways, but saying failed in the terms of a tag was not filled, it's very easy to start getting discouraged. Not necessarily because the tag wasn't filled, but really because you don't know where to go from there, how to improve. And that's what gets frustrating. That's what gets really depressing is, you know, I don't expect to go out and kill anything on my first trip. I try to, but when you don't know how to improve, when you don't know what lessons you need to learn, that's where you get frustrated. So, once again, seeing that improvement is really, really exciting. But yeah, you know, once again, talking about defining success. You know, I went into this trip, and I define my measure of success as really being kind of the do it myself, not have somebody point one out and have me find it. But I wanted to find an animal on my own, glass it up, and I got to do that. There were several times I glassed up some coyotes, and I glassed them up before Mason did. And now let me tell you guys, Mason is insane. He might be listening to this now, but this dude, I'll tell you what, I have never seen someone with eyes like this guy. We'll be cruising along full speed in the Rangers, getting to the spot where we're going to get out set up, start glassing. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, he's like, oh, look, there's a deer on that hill. Oh, look, there's a bunch of antelope over there. And we're all, like, straining to see where, and maybe someone will see it. But most of the time, we're all pulling out all our glass and trying to scan for what the heck he just saw. And we'll look, and it'll be, like, all that's visible is, like, an ear flickering from the shadows under a tree. And dude saw that with his naked eye. And he's quick on the draw, too. He's almost always the first one to spot something. So suffice to say, the few times that I actually glassed something up or saw something before Mason did, I take a lot of pride in that. It was, you know, y'all probably laughing at me now, but that was really exciting for me. But anyway, you know, one of my first measure of success was glassing something up, seeing it, locating it, and watching it. Like, that was a big thing. I had not done that yet. Short of a couple of birds and a jackrabbit, I had not really glassed up any deer, anything like that. Now, my other measure of success is I wanted to put a real stalk on an animal. Not like, oh, I walk out and they immediately blow out. Oh, you know, not one of these half-hearted stalks. But I wanted to put a real stalk on a deer to the point where I feel like I may not draw back, but I feel like I'm in shooting range where I actually have a chance at drawing back and taking a shot at this deer. And, you know, we focused mostly, the first week we focused mainly on Mason's antelope, but every so often we'd be going from one spot to another and we'd come across a few really good looking deer. We'd see them up on a slope or on a, you know, across a drainage or whatever. And if we weren't in a rush to get to a certain spot, we'd hop out and they'd get set up and keep glass on them, and Mason would kind of show me and take me on a stalk. He would show me what to do, like kind of where to go, when to be aggressive, when to hold back. And that was, you know, I remember the first real good stalk that I got to put on a deer. And, you know, it was probably an hour long stalk, something like that. They were keeping us, you know, they were moving around. I don't think they were really aware of us. They knew something was going on. And so they were kind of keeping us at about 90 to 100 yards, right around that 95 yard mark. And, you know, we'd keep moving. We'd be a little bit aggressive to try and catch ground on them, but then they'd wander away. And finally we got in within 60 yards on a button buck and a spike. And this spike is like through this gap in the trees, and we were ranging it, and the trees were at about 20 yards, and so I was kind of having to see, well, would I be able to make it through that gap with the arc of my arrow? And I just really didn't feel like I had a good shot at that deer's vitals. But there's a button buck at 60, maybe 65 yards broadside, and I was able to draw on that buck, and I released a shot. That was so exciting. You know, I'm not sure what happened. I may have grabbed my bow. I think I was just honestly aiming a bit too low and kind of pulled my shot down. But, you know, that was it for me. That was, you know, in the first, I can't remember if that was the first or second week or not, but really that, from that point on, I had a successful hunt. And, you know, as I've said before, everything else was icing on the cake. And, you know, I made the joke a couple podcasts ago about, you know, who likes eating cake without icing. But really, I was content. That was so exciting for me. And I got to make several more stalks. You know, I loosed a couple more arrows. And, you know, as you all know that have been listening by now, I finally got my buck on our last real day of hunting. You know, half an hour, 45 minutes before sunset. I guess, you know, now that I think about it, I haven't talked about this on the podcast. I mentioned it on Instagram, so if y'all aren't following me on Instagram, you may not know. But, yeah, our last day, Mason and I went out. We were going after some antelope, and while we were out there, the ranger, we noticed on the way out that it started getting really loud. The exhaust was sounding really, really loud. And it kind of looked like, okay, maybe one of the welds on the muffler had cracked a little bit. And we weren't too worried, though. It was just not exactly as incognito as we'd like. Well, we get the Ranger out. We get to our glassing point. You know, we stay there for an hour or two. And on our way back, we noticed that sound was getting louder and louder and louder. And long story short, the muffler had basically come completely detached. And it was so dang loud, we just couldn't even stand it. We had to stuff our ears with earplugs, with toilet paper as earplugs. And, you know, some of you may have seen the videos. We were acting a bit like idiots on the drive back. But it was just too loud, too obnoxious. And we were worried that the dang thing was going to start a fire with the heat coming off of it, just blowing right into the back of the Ranger. So we headed back, and we were both kind of bummed out, you know, because we were thinking that was the end, that was it. You know, once again, I was satisfied with my hunt. I was happy, but I still wanted to get that last, you know, three-quarters, half a day of hunting in. Well, we get back to the house, and, you know, Mason's talking with a couple of people, and a buddy of his, John, thank you so much, John, from up the street, offers to weld back together this muffler. So we run over there. He welds everything back together. You know, we let it cool down. We get the muffler back on. Ranger's running great. We hop in. We go out to another spot. We start cruising around, glassing into various, you know, faces on hills and canyons here and there, and just looking for some bucks for me to put a stalk on. And really weren't seeing anything. We saw a couple of does, you know, and we came across some bucks, but they were through this nasty drainage from me on this face, and the wind was all wrong. And this is about, you know, an hour to 45 minutes before sunset, and we were just looking, you know, this is going to be a long, difficult stalk, and there is honestly there's no way I'm going to get this done before sunset. I'll be lucky if I get up on them with shooting light left. And, I don't want to blow them out. So I marked the location, marked where they were at, decided, okay, I'll hop in my truck, I'll park as close as I can, and hike the rest of the way in, try and glass them up on the other side of the ridge the next morning, and or come around that next evening and see if they're in the same spot. But there's a little bachelor herd, a couple of forks, some actually really nice tall forks, and I think a spike in there too, and would have been great. So we decided to leave them be, and on our way out, Mr. Eagle Eye Mason picks out some deer on a ridge, or not a ridge, a face just off to our right, right as we're about to leave. And so we pull out the glass, we glass them up, and we see that one of them is a spike. We look at it, we're like, that's, the wind was right, and we're like, that's not a bad stalk. So, you know, we hop out, we grab our gear, and I stalk into 50 yards on this deer. There wasn't really much cover, so he kind of looks back over me, kind of trying to make out what I am, and he's perfectly broadside at 50 yards, so I draw back on him. As I draw back, he starts to quarter away, and Mason makes a little bam to try and stop him. Well, as I go to release, he turns, goes to run, and so it's a hard quarter. Right as I'm releasing, my shot ends up hitting further back than I expected. But man, the nice thing about shooting an elk setup is deer is it will punch through anything. So the shot went in through its back hip, up through the gut, and straight out through the vitals. You know, you flip that deer over, and it looks like a perfect heart shot. But, you know, he runs off, and you know, I kind of run up on this little hill so I can get a good view of where he's going off to. And I see him, he wasn't quite limping, wouldn't be the right word, but he was running really funny, and I hadn't seen exactly where I'd hit him. Mason knew that I had hit him further back, but You know, I'm watching, and he's running funny, and he's side-hilling across this spot, and all of a sudden, about 50 yards from where I had hit him, both of his legs just fold up underneath him, and he drops. Doesn't move, doesn't take a single breath after that, and, you know, I just couldn't even believe it. You know, I gave Mason a big hug, and, you know, we grabbed our gear and made our way across to the deer, and, you know, I walked up on him, and it's just, everything happened so fast that I just don't think I ever fully processed it. You know, it's hard to even say now how I feel about it. It's amazing. You know, as y'all that have been following me know, like, there's been a lot of buildup to this. This has been a very, very long time coming. And just after thinking the ranger was toast, thinking we weren't going to hunt, the excitement of getting back out, and then not really seeing anything, and then just thinking, like, okay, well, you know, we'll see what happens after that. It's just hard to believe. It still kind of feels like a dream. You know, I'm driving right now, and I've got a Yeti in the back of my pickup full of dry ice and whole lot of venison that, let me tell you, tastes dang good. Oh my gosh. You know, I am so proud of my deer. I'm proud of myself. I'm not ashamed to admit it. Like, I worked hard for this, and I had a lot of other people helping me out and also working hard for this, and I am proud of that it all came together, and I am super proud of my deer. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm under no illusions that he was this giant mule deer, but that doesn't matter. I mean, the first mule deer I put a stock on was a button buck. You couldn't even see those things without a pair of 15 power binoculars. But I would have been just as happy with him. So I'm under no illusions that he's this giant buck, and I'm not really concerned about that. Yeah, giant bucks are cool. Giant bucks are freaking awesome. They're beautiful. And you know what? If one had been standing there, I would have gladly shot him. But you know what? I would not trade this first buck for anything in the world. I mean, oh gosh, I'm so stinking proud of him. And, you know, you can probably still tell just by how I'm rambling that I'm still processing this whole thing and my feelings on it. But tell you what, the nice thing about him not being a ruddy and all that, you know, he only ran 50 yards, so, you know, he didn't have all that adrenaline churning through him. We got him gutted, cleaned and hung, skinned him, and got him quartered and in bags just, I mean, immediately. And the nice thing is we did it all. The nice thing about doing it right before sunset is that we were able to do that all at night. It stayed cool. We got him into the cooler, got him on ice, and then a day and a half later, we had him down. We were deboning him, processing everything, getting those cuts of meat, getting him ground, getting everything done, and we ate him that night. Oh, man, he was good. And I am looking forward to eating quite a bit more of that deer, I'll tell you what. Now, you know, I'm talking about all that deer meat that's in my Yeti in the back of the truck right now. There's one other thing that's sitting back in there, and I guess the story I skipped over in my excitement to talk about my deer was that my deer wasn't my first kill. We were, like I said, we were hunting really hard, and you hunt that hard for days and days and days in a row. You know, you're getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning to get way out there before sunrise. It's exhausting. You know, you're out till who knows how long. You're getting anywhere between 4 and 6 hours of sleep a night at most, and it's a struggle. It is, without a doubt, a pretty big struggle. And I driving by and thought that was a dog in someone's yard, and it was a deer. Really, really small deer. Thought it was a big dog. Anyway, gosh, I love being out of LA, if you can't tell. But yeah, so it's a struggle when you are forced to be just nonstop focused. So sometimes you gotta take a brain break. For Josh and Kathleen, you know, you need to be on brain rest. It's an inside joke, folks. They'll laugh, trust me. So one of the things that these guys are really big on, really love to do, especially Jeremy, is predator calling. Now, you know, I won't get too much into it here. You know, I made a long post about it on Instagram, but, you know, I know a lot of people disagree with predator calling or don't understand it. Thing is, it is as necessary and important part of conservation and our North American model of conservation as any sort of hunting. Food is great. Food is very important byproduct of hunting. That is a great reward for a hunt. And I know that's the main reason that a lot of people hunt, or at least that's the reason they say they hunt. You know, I always take that with a bit of a grain of salt. Just like, say, when I hunt, I'm contributing to conservation. Well, yeah, that's true, but that's also not the only reason I do it. That's an important reason and really makes me feel good about what I'm doing. But anyway, I digress. Predator hunting helps balance populations. You know, it helps keep other populations safe. It, you know, helps ensure that the coyotes or foxes or, you know, whatever these animals happen to be that we're hunting, and it is still managed by wildlife biologists. So, science versus, you're shooting the cute foxes and coyotes. It's feelings. Anyway, I digress. But yeah, so one of the things they love to do is go predator calling. And we went out and threw out the decoy, grabbed the rifle and the shotgun, and did some calling. We went out a couple of times and came close on a few stands, but Mason and I went out on a couple of stands one of these evenings, and, you know, we had the decoy out, and we were getting towards the end of the stand. You know, we had been going for 15 minutes or so on the calls, and we were both kind of thinking of packing it up, when Mason spots some movement out in the corner, points it out to me, and Gray Fox comes running in. You know, she came in right like she was on a string, ran into about 30 yards and stopped for just a split second, and I pulled the trigger, dropped her quickly and cleanly, and, you know, that was my first kill. You know, it wasn't with a bow. I was kind of expecting that my first one, you know, would be a deer with a bow, but, you know, wasn't meant to be. And I'll tell you what, just like I'm proud of my deer, I am so proud of this fox. One, she's beautiful. For a summer fox, beautiful tail, gorgeous hide, and I am planning on doing a full body mount with her. I guess you can eat fox. I have not tried it, so I cannot speak from firsthand experience whether or not it is any good. But some people have said they've tried it and liked it. I will hopefully try it someday. But, you know, this one was my first harvest. You know, with her being such a beautiful fox, I really wanted to get this one mounted. And, yeah, you know, it's preservation of memories. And you know what? It's a trophy. You know, I'm saying the T word. But it is. It is a trophy that commemorates a lot of hard work and study, and I'm just as proud of that fox being my first harvest as I am of, you know, my spike being my first big game tag filled. There were so many other victories. I mean, so many other victories on this trip. Just had an amazing time. I could not have asked for a better trip. The only one thing I would change about this trip would be Mason getting his antelope. I've never seen somebody work so hard for something in my life. I mean, that guy was going on 3 or 4 stalks a day sometimes. And, you know, keep in mind, folks, we may be up in the high desert, but this is still Arizona in August. It was not exactly pleasant weather while we were out there. And, you know, Mason's doing miles and miles on his feet each day, just working his butt off. I feel like he really earned that antelope, but, you know, I guess it was not meant to be for this trip. You know, he's sworn off, quote unquote, sworn off archery antelope. But we've talked about it, and yeah, he's totally putting in again. But it's a, you know, it's a hard hunt. I would have loved to see him fill that tag. You know, he came real close a couple of times, you know, but that's his story to tell for sure. But yeah, so that's the one thing I would have changed about this trip. There's so many other victories. I got a cottontail with my bow. that was a fun little harvest. And, you know, for those asking, cottontails and jackrabbits, you skin them. You can skin them really quick and easy. Mason showed me a way to just basically in one pull get them fully skinned. But if you skin them, gut them, and quarter them, you can do those quarters. They look a lot like chicken wings, and you can do them up just like a cassette of chicken wings. So you get a good group of jackrabbits or cottontails. You can have yourself a good old Super Bowl party. Anyway, but yeah, I got a cottontail. I'm actually looking at his tail right now. Got it sitting on my dash. You know, you guys, if you've been listening to the podcast, you've already heard about the snake. That was a huge victory for me. For those of y'all that don't know, I'll give you the short version, or you can listen to episode 80 with the Hunt 3A guys. You know, I do not do well with snakes at all, any snakes, but especially rattlers just absolutely terrify me. I mean, they just scared the ever-loving crap out of me. And we were coming back from one of the stands predator calling and came across a rattler, and Mason dispatched it with his shotgun, and I had to summon up quite a bit of courage to touch it and then actually pick it up. Because I'll tell you what, those things keep moving for hours after they're dead. And they will, without a head, they will try and strike you with the dang nub. It's all nerves, you know. There's no, like, it's not, like, spiteful that you killed it or anything. But, you know, it was freaky. Hopefully, you know, in the next week or so, yeah, I keep trying to do it, but I haven't had time. I'll be releasing an episode on actually skinning those, mounting the skin, and grilling up the meat. It was a nice, big, fat rattler. You know, it didn't have any parasites, so we skinned him and grilled him up, and, you know, he tasted good. It was definitely an interesting texture, kind of reminded me of a tough fish kind of texture, but the taste was very much uniquely its own. But yeah, full of victories. We went out, took another break, and went out one evening, a few of us to some ponds up outside of the town, and we did a little fishing for bluegill, and mostly we just, you know, it was just a nice, fun, relaxing time. Unfortunately, we forgot the beer. Come on. It just, we must have been brain dead from hunting all day. But yeah, we went in and pretty much just sat there jackpolling bluegill for a couple hours with hot dogs. That was fun. I could, you know, I tell you what, I could do that all day if I had a few beers with me. And nothing really beats a good relaxing day of fishing or hunting, you know. But yeah, this trip was uncountably more successful than I ever thought it could be, ever expected it to be. I wish you guys could see how big I'm grinning right now just talking about it. But yeah, you know, once again, big thank you to all the guys. Thank you to Jeremy for putting us up. You know, thanks to Ashley and Kathleen for taking care of us, keeping us fed. Had some amazing food. I, you know, ate better on this trip probably than I have at home in the past several months. But yeah, no, I will definitely, these guys have definitely become family for me. And I cannot wait until my next trip back down to Arizona. I'm already wondering how soon it can be. So, but yeah, hopefully I didn't bore y'all with that one. Just wanted to do a short little recap that ended up being a lot longer than I expected it to be. So hope y'all enjoyed it. Hope y'all pulled a little something out of it. If not, just some entertainment. But all right, you know, that'll do it for episode 82. Make sure y'all check out the show notes page at livingcountryinthecity.com/82. You can check out links to my own socials. No, I'm not going to put those up. y'all know how it ends. Alrighty. Keep it country, y'all.
Thank y'all for listening to Living Country in the City. Get show notes and check out the blog, product reviews, events, and more at livingcountryinthecity.com.
Spend your Saturdays with Life on the Water. Join Captain Brandon Simmons for fishing, diving, travel, and so much more.
You want to succeed. You want to fish. You want to be one of the greatest.
Oh, look at that thing, dude. Wow.
Oh. Let's see what kind of trouble we can get into today.
Don't miss Life on the Water every Saturday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV. The destination for outdoor entertainment. Pursuing wild game in wild places. Tune in to Hunt Stand Presents Saturdays at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.